now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to be talking about masculinity. Human males need to reclaim this. Human males need to become alphas once again. Human males need to reclaim that hunter, alpha, field general, operator mentality. I'm going to talk about sports. And for those of you not familiar with sports, particularly American sports, team sports, feel free to fast forward or feel free to tune out what I'm going to say. I'm going to be drawing parallels between war, actual war combat, and sports, because for many centuries, team sports and even individual sports had a connection with the warrior mentality, the warrior mystique, the warrior creed. It's important to understand this. All of this wimpiness, all of this cowardice, all of this touchy-feeliness, pardon my poor English, is a relatively recent development. As far as team sports are concerned, I'm pretty much an old-school guy. Old-school National Basketball Association, old-school Major League Baseball, old-school gridiron, i.e. National Football League. Gridiron, the old-school nickname for American football. Team sports today are a pale imitation of what they used to be like. Today's National Basketball Association, unwatchable. They don't even play defense anymore. In the old days, every shot was contested. Someone driving the lane to make a slam dunk or a layup, he was going to get hammered. Physical contact, the playoff games in the postseason, the officials used to throw away the whistle and just let the basketball players fight it out on the basketball court, and the games would be quite physical. Hard fouls, players crashing into each other, fights breaking out.
Think of the Detroit Pistons, the bad boys, Bill Laimbeer, Rick Mahorn, Vinnie Johnson, all those guys. And think about the Jordan rules that they created at the behest of their coach. Whenever Michael Jordan touches the ball, especially whenever he drives towards the hoop, he's going to get hammered by one, preferably more defenders. Hammered, just brought down, hit in midair, and then come crashing down on the floor, ideally with one or more Detroit Pistons laying on top of him, right? Over and over and over again. And this prompted both Michael Jordan and Scottie to bulk up in the offseason, to work out, to pump the weights, to build up their body and their muscle mass. So when they face the Detroit Pistons again, they'd be less likely to succumb to the brutal physical punishment they were going to be subjected to. In the Eastern Conference, you had all these battles between the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers, and it just was a different game back then. It was much more enjoyable, much more physical contact.
Those were the good old days. Centers actually being centers. Nowadays, everyone, including the centers, wants to fire away three-point shots. It's just a ridiculous game today. Unwatchable. Baseball used to be regarded as a quintessential American sport. What was the old saying? Mom, baseball, and apple pie. Those were the three things that were quintessentially American. But now, thanks or no thanks to all the rule changes and what have you, likewise, baseball has become unwatchable, especially since baseball went and took the knee for BLM. A decidedly, avowedly Marxist association, organization, hell-bent on destroying American society and American culture. So, I will talk about those three sports in particular. I've had Neil Cruz on the show before, and we talked about how competitiveness, drive, motivation, the desire, the yearning to be the top dog, to be the best, how that has been drummed out of people beginning in school years, grade school, to the point where now just participating, whether you or not you finish in the competition or finish in the top three, everyone gets a pat on the back, everyone is encouraged, everyone, many times, all the participants are given a participation medal just for showing up and just for taking part in what's supposed to be a competition, right? That dilutes the whole purpose and defeats the whole purpose of an award for an achievement, either an individual achievement or a team sports achievement. If everyone gets an award just for showing up and even giving a half-hearted, lame-o effort, but they get awarded for it anyway, it cheapens the whole concept of the awards ceremony, and the whole concept of the competition. Sports was a non-violent, non-fatal, for the most part, substitute or version of martial arts, martial skills, war making, war fighting. Many of the World War II generals in the American Army, General Patton, for example, they spoke in American football, American gridiron terms. They spoke of the importance of making an end run or an amphibious end run, and the parallel in gridiron football terms is a play that goes around off tackle to gain yardage. Well, the American generals use the term to describe an effort to go around, get beyond the enemy's flank. American gridiron coaches, American gridiron, i.e. NFL, pro football, or college football coaches, utilized war terms very frequently. The term the blitz that came from modern warfare jargon. American football and American team sports in general was a peacetime variation or counterpart to war fighting. It was a means to manifest, give expression to the martial spirit, the war fighting capability, but do it in a stylized form, a team sport. And these team sports were in the old days very, very physical. And let me give you some examples and draw parallels with the modern version, the modern iteration of these sports. And it's right in line with the whole concept of getting rid of the alpha males, getting rid of masculinity, and by extension, getting rid of the warfighting potential. Why is it that only a handful of NFL American football players have refused the stab, the jab. There's been one assistant coach who refused the jab, and he's been fired. But there's just been a handful of actual players that have refused the jab. So when people think of the NFL, the National Football League, they think of these huge behemoths of males, these alpha dogs, big tough guys. But that's not the case. General Patton said, "Moral courage is far more rare and far more important than physical courage." And what he meant by that was, it's very easy to train the ability to think for oneself and do so at the expense of the team, do so at the expense of the unit, do so at the expense of the Army in general or the Marine Corps in general. So boot camp is designed to drum out any initiative, any notion of self-identity, and then remold the recruits into an unthinking automaton, a person who is essentially brainwashed by the military, can be ordered to charge a strongly fortified enemy position and perchance get gunned down, killed, blown up, whatever the case may be. So is there an element of physical courage? Absolutely. But a lot of it has to do with the sense of self, and by extension, the sense of self-preservation being drummed out of people in the indoctrination process. This is an important point to make. The moral courage that General Patton referred to was the ability to still think for oneself and to make decisions based on one's own moral compass. Moral courage, disobeying unlawful, unconstitutional orders, for example, or going against orders and doing what's right in order to save lives, in order to avoid a bloodbath, in order to avoid the slaughter of oneself and one's comrades for no particular purpose. It's incumbent upon a soldier, enlisted or officer, it doesn't matter, to say, "No, I'm not following through with that order. It's stupid, it's suicidal, it doesn't make any sense. It's illegal." That takes moral courage. That's why General Patton said moral courage is far more rare and far more important than physical courage. And getting back to the sporting aspect, why is it that only a handful of NFL players have refused the stab, the jab, the vaccine? Isn't the NFL full of tough guy hombres, big tough alpha males? Well, apparently not. Apparently not. And I'll never forget what the great Randy White said. He was one of my favorite players, known as the Manster. He was a multiple-time All-Pro and eventual Hall of Famer for the Dallas Cowboys, a defensive tackle. And he talked about, in today's modern game, how in his day, when the ball was snapped and the play began, the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman essentially engaged in the football version of warfare, right? Again, to borrow a term from the military and from war, they used to speak in the NFL about the battle in the trenches. And what they meant by that was the combat, if you will, between the offensive and the defensive linemen, crashing into each other, grunting and pushing and pulling. And the defensive linemen in the old days used to do what was called a head slap. The moment the ball was snapped and the play began, the defensive lineman would rise up and just, with the palm of their hand, just bash the offensive lineman in the side of the head, knock them goofy, and while they were momentarily stunned, push past them and get to the ball carrier and tackle the ball carrier for a loss of yardage sometimes. Deacon Jones, the great Los Angeles Rams defensive lineman, part of what was known as the fearsome foursome, he was the one that pioneered the head slap, right? And what some offensive linemen, one of them in particular, I can't remember his name, don't quote me on this, I think it was a guy named Bob Brown, but what the offensive lineman he played against, who created a countermeasure, well, here was the countermeasure. He drilled holes in the side of his helmet and put screws in from the inside out and then put a little tape over it, right? So it covered up the pointed screw sticking out of the helmet, but only covered it superficially. So when Deacon Jones would head slap him, he would impale his hand on the side of the guy's helmet, okay? That's old school football, folks. And the matchup between the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman, just bashing into each other and just grunting and pushing and just all out physical duress, physical combat, if you will. And it would get down and dirty in the offensive and defensive line battles. To the point there was once an offensive lineman for the St. Louis Cardinals known as, his name was Conrad Dobler. And he was regarded at one time as the dirtiest player in the NFL because he used to bite the fingers of his opponents. And then when asked about it, he said, well, if you're playing a game and someone is sticking their fingers through your face mask, what are you going to do? Implying that he would bite them, right? And in contrast to all that, Randy White said of today's game, whereas in the past, the offensive and defensive linemen would slam into each other at the outset of a play and continuing on until the whistle was blown by the officials, today's offensive and defensive linemen play a form of patty cake, where they just, in a perfunctory way, just come up from their low position stances and just kind of do this stylized form of patty cake and pushing against each other, but not in an all-out violent way. The play, the interplay between the offensive and defensive lines has become wussified, has become pansified, if that's a word. Moreover, there's been a number of rule changes that benefit the offense, because part of the rationale is that offense is more appealing to the spectator and in the long run, more offense is equates to more viewers, more endorsements, more exciting games, etc., etc. So many of the rule changes going back decades now have been favorable to the offense and unfavorable for the defense. It must have been 20 years or so by now, at least, when NFL Hall of Famer, retired Pittsburgh Steeler Jack Lambert, said something to the effect that modern-day quarterbacks need to wear pink tutus or something to that effect, because the rule changes were designed and meant to protect the quarterbacks from getting harmed. And Lambert and many of the old-school guys objected to that. Their viewpoint was a quarterback is a ball handler, a ball carrier, therefore the quarterback needs to pay the price the way any other ball carrier needs to pay the price when they try to gain yardage, against a defense, right? And I can understand that mentality. Remember, all of this is meant from a cultural slash sporting standpoint to drum aggressiveness out of the game, to drum manliness out of the game, to drum masculinity out of the game. Think about the original predecessor of what is known as lacrosse, a team sport that is played in many colleges, universities across America. It was based on, originally based on a Native American game, and the ball or the object of pursuit was a little object. I forget what it was made out of, cloth, rawhide, something or other. And the ball carrier, if you will, would either carry it protectively around their abdomen, or sometimes they would actually keep the object in their mouth as they went running along the playing field. Now, what the opponents, the other team, would do was, well, they would punch the guy in the stomach, knee the guy in the stomach, kick the guy in the stomach, in an effort to make the ball carrier, if you will, cough it up, right? To literally cough up the ball that they were carrying in their mouth, right? So when you hear these bleeding hearts screaming about, oh, you know, the sports, American sports in the old days were so barbaric, and of course it would usually be some pencil-necked libtard that would be screaming about this, it completely ignores the fact that, you know, sports like lacrosse, as originally played by the Native Americans, was quite violent. And you look at a sport like polo in the old days, where, you know, people riding around on horses, you know, with big mallets with long handles, and they're going around striking this ball, right? Crashing into each other, horses crashing into each other, people falling off horses and breaking limbs. General Patton, well, when he was a younger officer, got seriously injured once on the polo field. Many of the individual athletic events in the Olympics are based on martial war fighting skills. The discus throw, the hammer throw, the javelin throw, those are all based on war fighting skills. Archery, another example. All of it was based on war fighting skills. The whole original idea of the Olympics was for all these Greek city-states to get together every once in a while, every 4 years. You know, stop fighting for a while because of the incessant internecine warfare between the various polises, city-states. So they can get together every once in a while and have a sporting competition, individual and team sports. And again, many of the sports were based on, many of the competitions were based on martial skills. But they don't want that. They don't want martial skills. They don't want a warrior ethos anymore. They don't want a warrior mentality, a true masculinity. They want to drum that all out. And in its place, leave the soy boy kind of weak-kneed, tenderfoot, pansy ass, right, quite frankly. The only ones that they want to be alphas are the psychopath cops and people like that. They don't want alphas amongst the general population. And I must say that and I'm in a position where I can comment on this, having spent a lot of time in America, having spent a lot of time in Australia. Where have all the alphas gone? In two countries that used to have a rich military tradition, the Americans have a longer standing one, but the Australians have had a very strong military ethos, military history of their own. But now it's just been completely supplanted and replaced by this whiny, bitchy mentality. I'm sure it's like this in many countries in the West because of the long-standing attack through chemicals and through bisphenol A and through fluoridation and through vaccines and everything else. The weakening of the population in general, but the attack on masculinity in particular. But what I've seen of so many Australian males just being totally inept and totally from a warfighting standpoint, virtually useless. The military in general, they'll fight whoever their political masters want them to fight. But when it comes to fighting for their own country, I just don't see that will. I just don't see that mentality to go against their orders and do what's right. Because the path to least resistance is just to follow orders. That's the easiest route many of these people will take. There's a reason why the police are cracking down on the western suburbs of Sydney, because that's where a lot of Lebanese immigrants reside and other so-called minorities. And they think they can bully boy these Lebanese. They're going to be in for a surprise. These Lebanese survived years of warfare, years of Israeli airstrikes, invasions by the Israeli Defense Force, etc., etc., right? And these are people that are not going to back down. And that goes for a lot of the Greek communities, too, because it's in the DNA of the Greeks to fight. I mean, it was a handful of Greeks that fought off the massive Persian army 2,000 years ago. Imagine what would have happened if the Persians had taken over Greece. I mean, that means that there's no Hellenism. There was no Alexander around to, even though he was a Macedonian, he adopted Greek culture and Greek ways. There had been no spreading of Greek culture through Alexander's conquest. There would have been no Roman society which copied the Greeks, and the Romans spread the Latin language and all the languages based on Latin. And Greek, Roman, Greco-Roman culture, as we know it, would not have been spread out the way it had been. Instead of all these Roman aqueducts and Roman temples and Roman amphitheaters, you would have seen all these mosques and what have you all over Europe. Had the Greeks not fought, a small handful of them, relatively speaking, against the mighty Persian hordes, right? And you've often heard me talk about how just a handful of American colonial patriots, i.e. the Founding Fathers and the soldiers, the Continental Army, fought and defeated the British Crown, and how that changed history for the next 200 years. Well, yeah, the Greeks changed history for the next 2,000 years. Think about that. So I do feel that there's a lot of Australians that will fight for their country. Most of them won't, but a lot will. But the wild card, the ace in the hole, if you will, and there's a delicious irony to this too when you consider the efforts at multiculturalism, the efforts of supplanting the throughout the Western world, not just Australia, but throughout the Western world, supplanting the existing European-based culture, white culture, with mass immigration, right, and radically changing the face and the demographics and the culture of these countries, is precisely because of the cultural Marxism, the abolishment, if you will, of the warrior ethos that has made it so easy as part of the Coudenhove Kalergi plan to bring in hordes of Africans, hordes of Sunni slash Sharia Muslims into the Western world, and how the latter have so easily taken over. It's precisely because these Africans and a lot of these Muslims, they're not soy boys, okay? they come from a society, a culture that venerates, that idolizes the warrior ethos, the alpha male, right? So that's why they go into Europe, beat up Europeans, rape European women, and basically nothing is done, because the European males generally just roll over. Well, that's not the case in Eastern European countries like Hungary and Poland. There's still a traditionally Catholic slash Christian country with a strong sense of self-identity. They haven't been thoroughly homogenized by the European Union, and hence they have their own, especially Hungary, have their own ideas about immigration and about maintaining one's national sovereignty, okay? But they're a minority as far as nation states go. The rest of Europe, the EU, has fallen in line. There are huge no-go areas throughout Europe now where a white person would just get killed or raped or whatever if they even come close to these places. And it's a direct result of what I've been pointing out in this whole commentary. The warrior ethos has been drummed out of the Europeans and the European-based, heritage-wise, societies, right? In America, we still have that warrior ethos that will never go away because of the Second Amendment, no matter how much the leftist Luciferian sewer scum try to get rid of that. They will not entirely get rid of that warrior ethos. Tracking back to sports, because that's what I was talking about, let me talk about baseball. In the old days, baseball was a very, very manly sport. As a means to kind of balance myself out and not get caught up in all this negativity and fear and doom and gloom, what I've done is, well, I've chucked modern professional sports, team sports, out of my life. So I watch a lot and listen to a lot of the old games that you can still find on YouTube. And I watch documentaries about some of the old teams in baseball, basketball, and American football. And also I've joined a number of Facebook groups that have to do with vintage, old school baseball, etc. And it just shows you how the soy boy, leftist, woke-tard, mealy-mouthed influence has just corrupted everything. In one of these vintage, old-school baseball Facebook groups, someone put a post up, and it's well-known for those of us who study the history of baseball, which I have, okay? Anything I'm interested in, I study the history of. That's just the way I am. And it was a photo of an old baseball card of Jim Ray Hart. Jim Ray Hart was a infielder for the San Francisco Giants, a black gentleman. And when he came up and he was making his first major league start, or rather the first time he played in a game against the St. Louis Cardinals, and in particular the St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Bob Gibson, one of the great all-time intimidating pitchers, San Francisco Giant greats and future Hall of Famers like Willie McCovey and Willie Mays said to Jim Ray Hart, "Look, whatever you do, when you go in to bat against Gibson, do not dig in, i.e. you'll see batters, when they get to the plate, they start like scratching the dirt around home plate to create like a little hole from which they can plant their rear foot and which they can use to push off when they drive towards the ball, right? It's called digging into the plate. And these old-timers, Willie Mays and Willie McCovey, said, whatever you do, don't dig in at the plate against Bob Gibson. He's not going to like it. He's going to drill you, okay? Well, Jim Ray Hart, when he came to the plate the first time against Gibson, he starts digging in, right? He starts just scraping at the dirt next to home plate with his cleats. And McCovey and Mays are screaming from the Giants dugout, no, no, don't do that. Meanwhile, Gibson yells from the mound, you better keep digging and dig it deep enough, because I'm gonna bury you in it, right? Words to that effect. Well, the first pitch from Gibson comes in, and nothing happens. And then Jim Ray Hart digs in again, right? The next pitch comes in, drills Jim Ray Hart in the shoulder, and he suffers a shattered collarbone. And he's laying there in agony, right? And so when someone posted the picture of Jim Ray Hart and added that story to it, a number of people chimed in, well, that's old school baseball. That's Bob Gibson, one of the great intimidators of all time, right? It's a long story. I've told it before. But Bob Gibson even drilled his best friend, who wound up getting traded to another team, another black guy that he had to suffer the indignities of segregation with, right? Where they're not allowed to even be in the same hotel as their white teammates. And you hear these pampered black athletes today, oh, racism, racism. They've got their entourages and they got their mansions, and everyone's afraid to criticize them for their play, no matter how justified, because the criticizers will be assailed from all sides as being racist, right? Well, these people and these blacks in the old days, the great Bill Russell, the Boston Celtics center, vandals broke into his house and defecated on his bed and around his house, right? Dave Parker, you know, the Cobra from the Pittsburgh Pirates, the great 1979 team that won the World Series, you know, people vandalized his house, blew up his mailbox, right? The great Oscar Robertson, the great basketball player, Cincinnati Kings and the Milwaukee Bucks. He won a world championship with the Milwaukee Bucks. He was threatened by the Ku Klux Klan, okay? That was like in the 60s, in the 70s that was going on. Nothing like the kind of, you know, pampered crap that the black athletes go through today, right? Look what's going on in the Olympics, for crying out loud. Anyway, getting back to the Facebook vintage baseball thread, a number of people chimed in, well, that was the way it was back then. And, you know, baseball needs to get back to that level of intimidation, to get back to that level of pitching inside, right? And that's been legislated out of baseball, too, that if a pitcher comes inside to a batter and they hit the batter, even by accident, they stand the risk of being ejected from the game. So it's taken the inside pitch away from the batter. So now these batters come up to the plate. They've got these arm guards and these elbow pads and what have you. They're crowding the plate. They're taking away the inside part of the plate. So that only leaves the middle of the plate, which the pitchers are supposed to avoid anyway, and the outer part of the plate. So again, once again, the rules favor the offense and disfavors, if that's bad English, the defense. So all these people were chiming in to this thread saying, well, you know what, Jim Ray Hart was told by McCovey and Mays, don't dig in to Gibson, that's going to happen, right? And of course, the mealy-mouthed woke-tards start chiming in, that's barbarous, that's not real baseball, that's just violent, sadistic mayhem, yada, 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 right? I watched an interview with four Hall of Fame catchers, Gary Carter, Johnny Bench, Carlton Fisk, and the great Yogi Berra from the New York Yankees. And there's another guy. As an Italian, he suffered a lot of racism when he first came into baseball. Always being called a Dago and a Wop and, you know, a noodle twister and every other kind of ethnic slur you can think of, right? What these four Hall of Famers talked about, catchers, arguably the most demanding, one of the most demanding positions to play, especially for an everyday player, is the catcher position. And during the course of the discussion, they were being interviewed by Tim Russert, the late Council on Foreign Relations guy, talking head for the corporate media. The subject of old school play, the pitching inside the what they call the brushback pitch, not necessarily beating someone, but coming close enough to make them, you know, jackknife out of the way or go down low and get them to dance, you know, skip their feet, right? To avoid getting hit in the shins or something. And also the deliberate, at times, beaning of opposing players. Because sometimes it's something you have to do. If your batters are getting drilled unmercifully by the opposing team's pitching staff, if you're a major league pitcher and you want to retain the respect of your teammates, at some point you're going to have to step in. Not on any occasion, but just on the right occasion, when it will not affect the outcome of the game you're playing. And that is retaliate. At some point you're going to have to drill one of the players on the other team to let them know that you're just not going to take liberties on our batters and drill them unmercifully, and we're not going to do anything about it. I know there have been times in certain major league clubhouses when the lack of retaliating, what they call the lack of protecting, the inability to protect one's own players precisely by retaliation on the batters of the other team or teams that are causing you these problems, has led to divisions in the clubhouse where the batters feel that the pitchers are not sticking up for them. And that's a valid point to have. And sometimes in like true, revenge is a dish best served up cold standpoint. You know, some teams, I remember the pitchers from the Atlanta Braves. I think it was John Smoltz, great Hall of Fame pitcher. He's had over 200 career victories as a starter and over 200 career saves as a closer, a ninth inning closer. And I think it was Schmaltz who said that there was one batter they were just wanting to get, right? And they waited like 2.5, 3 seasons or longer before they finally drilled him. Because the guy wound up bouncing from one team to another. And they just wanted to get this guy. So they waited all that time and they finally drilled him. I think in spring training, he didn't even wait for the season to start. But getting back to that discussion between those four catchers, and when the subject of old school hardball baseball came up, of pitching inside, of hitting opposing batters, without exception, all four of them said that baseball needs to go back to that, that hard-nosed style of play. I mentioned Bob Gibson earlier, but Gibson was by no means the only so-called headhunter from the 1960s. You had people like Don Drysdale from the Los Angeles Dodgers. You had one pitcher named Sal Magley, known as Sal the Barber Magley, because his penchant for going high and tight on the batters. And there was a lot of other pitchers that would protect their own batters. So the batters knew that the pitchers had their back, that the opposing pitchers will not take liberties on one's own batters and, retaliate. at the right time. Not necessarily during that game or even during that series. Maybe a month or two or a few months down the track in another game, another series, right? That's how baseball works. One of the problems baseball had was, and I think there has been a deliberate effort to destroy the game of baseball, make it unwatchable, just like for me, the NFL is unwatchable and the NBA is unwatchable. To me, the Major League Baseball style of play today is unwatchable to me. Plus all these ridiculous rule changes designed to destroy the game. But one of the worst ongoing changes done to the game of baseball was in early to mid-1970s when the designated hitter rule was brought into play in the American League. Baseball made a panic move because of the rising popularity of football in America. And the 1960s was an era dominated by pitching, so there wasn't as much offense as the powers that be in Major League Baseball would have liked. They were worried that they were losing fans to the more exciting football, okay? But a lot of us baseball purists, I mean, we love nothing more than a pitcher's duel, a very tight, low-scoring ball game. But what they decided, and what may have been a panic move, was, and they tried to get it for both leagues, the American and National League, but it only stuck in the American League thus far, although there's talk that sometime down the track, this will be the case in the National League as well. Perish the thought. 1973, they brought in the designated hitter in the American League. So from that point on, the pitcher no longer bats. Someone called a designated hitter bats in place of the pitcher throughout the game. And many of us at the time, and still do, just loathe the whole concept of the designated hitter because it takes away from the strategy of the game, slows the game down. And another key aspect of it is the equalizing effect of having the pitcher bat. Let me explain. If a pitcher just goes off a deep end and just starts drilling batters, the opposing batters on the other teams, right? And he's doing it without letting his own side know. He's doing it, and then his own batters start to feel the repercussions and the retaliation, right? Well, if the pitcher is doing this in the American League, the pitcher that's drilling everybody, they never have to face the consequences of their actions because they never have to bat. So you will notice if you follow the game of baseball that most of the brawls that have erupted during games is the result of these beanball wars in the American League. A batter on one team gets drilled and the retaliation occurs in the same game. Another batter on the other team gets drilled and this goes tit for tat back and forth until eventually a brawl ensues. And this happens more often in the American League because in the National League, pitchers know they can't get away with that. Because sooner or later, the pitcher is going to have to bat. And if he's been getting on everyone's nerves by drilling everybody, sooner or later, that pitcher is going to get drilled. He's going to get drilled multiple times, not just once. But in the American League, that doesn't apply. So you had headhunters like Pedro Martinez, who's just constantly drilling people. And he never has to get drilled. He never has to bat in the game. So the point of relevance is you go back to the old school of baseball. You get rid of the designated hitter. And all four of those catchers I mentioned, Carlton Fisk, Johnny Bench, Gary Carter, and the great Yogi Berra, they're all great. They said, we need to go back to that style of baseball. And Yogi Berra said that back in his day, and I heard about this before, but it was interesting hearing it come from Yogi Berra's mouth. He said, in my day, if someone hit a home run off a pitcher, the very next batter was going to get drilled. The very next batter was going down. That was just the way it was. And it was understood, right? Yogi Berra also said that twice in his career, prior to a game, the opposing pitcher said to him, "I'm going to drill you," right? Or words to that effect. And Yogi said, "Well, why?" Right? And the guy told him, "Because you hit me too well. You hit too many of my pitches. You have success against me. Therefore, you're going down," right? And Yogi was fine with that. It just, that's the way the game was played. And all four of them said, baseball needs to go back to that form of play. So, you know, hit the reverse button, go back to what I said earlier about that mealy-mouthed, libtard, woke person screaming on these Facebook vintage baseball groups, "Oh, you know, Bob Gibson drilling people, that's not a good thing. I don't know why you guys make a joke out of it." No one was making a joke out of it. They were just saying, yeah, that happened, and those things did happen. And that's just the way the baseball game was played back then. Gibson was known for doing those things, right? Nobody was gloating or laughing about it. Jim Ray Hart told the story himself about how McCovey and Mays pleaded with him to not dig in before taking any at-bat against Gibson. He didn't listen. He got drilled. That was the moral of the story, right? And you know what? There was a humorous aspect to that, I think, and a lot of people thought so too. But, you know, skunk of the garden party, these liberals got to pop up out of nowhere because, you know, they don't like manliness. They don't like, you know, when people are puffing their chest out in true alpha male fashion, right? And talking about the good old days. And Johnny Bench also talked on numerous occasions about what's known as the Buster Posey rule, which I call the Buster Pussy rule. Let me explain. One of the duties of the catcher is to block home plate. If a runner is trying to come in to score and the ball is coming in from the outfield, whether it's coming directly from an outfielder or it's coming from a middle reliever who's the cutoff man, receives the ball from the outfielder, turns around, fires the home plate. And the catcher catches the ball. He blocks the plate with his body and his legs. So the base runner can't get to the plate and is tagged out. This usually results in a big collision, right? Buck Martinez was a catcher for, what team was he on at the time? Seattle Mariners, Toronto Blue Jays, I can't remember, but he suffered two collisions at home plate as the catcher on the same play, okay? So one base runner tries to score, crashes into Buck Martinez, broke his leg, if memory serves. He tagged the guy out, and then another guy tried to score on the same play, and Buck Martinez had the presence of mind to tag him out too, you know, with a broken leg. Carted him off the field. Well, the Buster Posey rule came about because Buster Posey was a catcher for the San Francisco Giants, and he didn't block the plate correctly. When the base runner came in to try to score, he wound up breaking Buster Posey's legs, or one of his legs. And Buster Posey screamed, you know, figuratively and literally after the game, saying that, you know, that shouldn't be allowed, yada, yada, yada. Because Buster Posey was one of the high-profile players in baseball, one of the best hitters during that era. They changed the rule and called it the Buster Posey rule. But Johnny Bench, the great catcher, said, no, Buster Posey messed up on that play. He didn't block the plate correctly. That's why he got injured, right? And that's why I call it the Buster Pussy rule, because Buster Posey uses incorrect technique, winds up getting his leg broken, and then he wants to change the rules of baseball, which have been going on for over 100 years. Max Scherzer is a pitcher. He's recently been traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers. When he first came over from the American League, he began pitching for the Washington Nationals in the National League. And one of his first times he comes at a plate to bat, he gets drilled and he gets injured. And then he starts screaming and squawking, "Oh, we should change this. There should be no more batting in the National League. It should go to the designated hitter like it is in the American League." So this guy rocks up, batting in the National League, gets drilled, and then he wants to change the rules. The National League's always had the pitcher's bat. But, you know, this self-entitled, privileged git who's making a ridiculous amount of money, he gets drilled, and suddenly he wants to change the rules. And that's that wimp factor I'm talking about, right? You know, since then, and in all fairness, the Max Scherzer, he's, you know, he says he likes batting now because he's had some success as a pitcher, you know, batting in the National League. But at the time, he was making those comments, and it really irked me. Because, you know, he suffers a little misfortune. It's part of the game. You get hit by pitches, sometimes by accident, a lot of times by accident, because a pitcher loses control. But he wants to change the rules, right? So, you know, and you contrast that with the old school guys, Buck Martinez, you know, suffering two collisions at home plate with base runners trying to score, and he breaks a leg in the process, right? Carried off the field, but he doesn't complain. He doesn't want the rules changed, right? So the point of relevance here is they've taken out the toughness. They've taken out the manliness. They've taken out the alpha male out of baseball is what they've done. And to be replaced by all these whiny bitches that I'm just tired of listening to them. And I haven't watched one baseball game this year, and I refuse to. Because I'm not going to watch anything that promotes BLM, promotes all this woke BS. They can go to hell. I'll just get my baseball fix listening to and watching the oldie games that are, you know, up on YouTube and anywhere else I can find them. So the point of all this is sports is a big part of American culture, American society. And the way they wussed it down, the way they made it so anti-male, so anti the alpha male, make it all touchy-feely. And the fact that a lot of us old schoolers, old-timers, we wanted to go back to the old days, right? Because that's the way the game should have been played. As a, you know, a contest of alpha males against each other. It's a competition. It's a stylized form of warfare. That's the point I'm making. Right? So, anyhow, I just thought I'd get that off my chest and, you know, talk about how American sports in particular, right? I mean, we see the same thing in Australia where Australian Football League, AFL, they don't allow the players to have fights anymore. So what you see is a bunch of players standing in a circle just pushing each other. It's just like a shoving match, you know. It's just nothing could be more certain to get players frustrated, right, than just not even be able to give vent to their emotions. They just have to settle for pushing one another, right? So anyhow, just thought I'd get those points across about how American professional sports have just been totally undermined, hijacked, as a shell of its former self, because they don't want in the major American team sports to highlight, to showcase real manliness, machismo, masculinity, alpha males, alpha dogs. They don't want that. They want everything wussified. They want everything touchy-feely. They want everything inoffensive, right? So it's part of the agenda, folks. It really is part of the agenda. And I read somewhere some time ago about how they had planned all along to destroy American team sports that people really identify with as being quintessentially American sports, right? So anyhow, just thought I'd get that out. And thank you for listening. This is James Bartley, and wherever you are, whatever you may be doing, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. Because this is a frequency war.